panelists are making their way forward, let me introduce Scott Vaughan. His bio will tell you that he is the new Commissioner for the Environment and Sustainable Development in the Office of the Auditor General. And that is the outfit that cracks whips over the performance of recalcitrant government departments at the federal level. And he does it very well. He has a distinguished career which brings him to this point. He has worked in the political field. He has worked in the academic field. He has worked in the international environmental field, all at senior levels. Scott.
Referring to, so I'll keep close attention to it. First of all, let me thank Bob and the McGill Institute as well for organizing this. This has been I very much enjoyed the morning. I have several colleagues here, and we're working on a report that we're presenting to Parliament in the fall, looking at the federal responsibilities as well as implementation of freshwater management. We are also looking at a report on cumulative environmental assessments also being presented to Parliament in the fall, and we will be looking at oil sands and potential impacts on the Athabasca and other environmental issues from the assessment side on that. So this has been very helpful to me and also helpful to my colleagues here today. So the session right now is titled Water Governance in Canada. And it's obviously intentionally been bracketed between two ministers. We've just heard from Minister Prentice outlining some of the federal priorities, past actions, as well as what's on the books on Great Lakes, St. Lawrence, Port of Montreal, as well as the municipal effluents regulations that are coming into effect. And we will look forward to Minister Johnson in her dual capacity, both as Minister of Environment and Conservation of Newfoundland and Labrador, as well as the President of CCME. And Jim Bruce, I think, correctly said this morning when saying what are some potential bright spots on looking at one of the governance, among the governance challenges in Canada, the CCME, the acronym is the Council of, thank you, about you all know, involving federal and provincial ministers, has set out some past Canada-wide standards as well as fairly new ambitious goals, which I'm looking forward to hearing from the minister. I'm sure you will as well. I just wanted to say by way of introduction, Steve Renzetti mentioned this morning a report that was published 25 years ago. It was the Pierce Report for many of you that followed that. And I think he correctly said that the issue of pricing that Peter Pierce had identified in that report has not been solved. I think it's also fairly safe to almost all the issues that were identified in that report, which to those of you and those of us working on freshwater issues remains a challenge. I think that many of the issues that were identified in that report remain with us today, and in addition, which look like things which are on the distant horizon, for example, climate change, 25 years later, have now magnified and present new challenges as well as compounding existing ones. We know from, and hearing from the discussions this morning, there are lots of different pilots, lots of different models. There's been an explosion in the literature on governance in general, environmental governance, water governance in particular. There's been models that have been put into place on translating integrated water resource management from theory to practice. There's been different pilots on multi-jurisdictional cooperation at the basin or watershed level. However, here we are today, I think that one of the recurring themes that at least I heard from this morning was the gap between potential solutions and actual actions, or what can be characterized as a governance deficit. So with that, I'm very much looking forward to this panel on providing both some of the problems as well as, I think, some of the solutions that that they may have. And you have their bios, but I will begin with Rob Deleau. And Rob is the University Research Chair at Water Policy and Governance at the University of Waterloo and Director of the Multi-University Water Policy and Governance Group. Rob, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So it's a great pleasure to be here today. This is a really exciting venue, and there's a chance to catch up with lots of folks I've known for a while and lots of new people as well. So I'm very excited to be here, and thanks to the organizers for putting all of this together. I don't have any slides for you today, so as Madeleine said this morning, you will have to look at me. I'm not a complete Luddite, though. I am updating my Twitter feed as I'm delivering this talk here, so you can monitor me on Twitter. My hand is a little bit sore because I had to rewrite my talk at least three times this morning because many of the previous speakers were kind enough to deliver it for me. So I've had to adapt and be a little bit nimble here, so hopefully a coherent product results. So the panel, we're talking about governance today, and governance is a term that we've heard a lot, which I think is very good because I think it's a discussion that we need to be having in this country. Water governance. I'm going to keep the focus on a particular theme, though, I think, in my 8 minutes or so. I'm going to be speaking to questions of governance in terms of a national orientation or a national perspective. We've heard a lot about the need for a national strategy of some kind, so I want to talk about what that might actually mean, what it might actually look at. But you're going to see that I have to shift up and down scales because any kind of a national strategy is going to involve some sort of coordinated action at all scales. So why are we having this meeting, and why are we having all the other meetings that have been happening in the last couple of years and all the other meetings that are scheduled for the next few years? And I think we heard from Nick Nanos this morning that this reflects a substantial increase in general public awareness and understanding of the issues. We're all familiar with a lot of the scary hotspots and stories that we've heard. But I think more broadly, it reflects the fact that some of this is making its way into communities across the country and communities all across the country. People are going about living their lives and slowly but surely starting to recognize that water availability is a concern. It's something they need to be worried about, whether it's water shortages or it's contamination incidents, or if you live in a small community and you're dealing with boil water orders. Your concern for water security in general is heightened. I think communities, citizens, governments, and firms are waking up to the fact that adequate access to adequate quantities of water of acceptable quality for people in the environment is by no means guaranteed in this country, even though we've had this myth of abundance that has been nicely shattered at this meeting here. And this is, of course, part of a growing concern around the world at all levels for the significance of water. So what does that mean for the topic of governance? When I say governance, I'm talking really about, I'm using the term quite broadly to refer to the countless different ways in which we organize ourselves as a society to make decisions that affect water. There's a vast palette of different ways of governing water, and the options and approaches have really changed in Canada, I think, in the last decade or so. And so I think it's important before we get into the question of, well, what would a coordinated national approach look like, to spend a few minutes on a slight tangent and look at some of the realities of water governance today. And I just picked three. There are lots of other ones. We could quibble about what's most important. But I think it's helpful to talk about things like the fact that I think complexity is, I would argue, significantly higher today than in previous generations, and for a whole variety of reasons. A lot more actors, for starters. So it's not just governments anymore, although, of course, governments are central and critical for the constitutional responsibilities and for other reasons. But we've got all kinds of other actors who have come to the table when it comes to governance, and we're talking civil society groups, water-using industries, Canada's Indigenous peoples, of course, banks and financial institutions, the insurance and reinsurance companies. The number and diversity of actors has increased, as has the number of interests, of course. More and different problems, I think, contributes to the complexity as well. All of the old problems that we faced forever in this country and haven't managed to solve yet are still here. Some of those are getting worse, but we have new considerations. Questions such as the provision of environmental flows, which weren't really on the radar a generation ago, are now a priority concern. And, of course, when you're starting to talk about providing water for the environment in regions that are already water scarce, inevitably what you're talking about is taking water away from somebody else. And as we heard this morning, this becomes a fundamentally political consideration. I think there are also more tools in the toolkit in terms of how we think about governance. So regulations, of course, as we heard this morning, are very important, but we're also exploring opportunities to use market-based mechanisms. Collaborative approaches are much more important. So that's one of the realities. The second reality, I think, is that the stakes are higher. I think there's increased pressure on water resources in areas where there traditionally has been pressure. And I think we're starting to see lots of more additional pressure in new kinds of places as well that haven't previously experienced shortages, for example. We have a serious risk of irreversible environmental damage if present patterns continue. And, of course, we have lots of reasons where we've already created permanent environmental damage. We have increased risk of economic disruption and reduced productivity in regions and communities and sectors. We're starting to make that water economy connection a little bit better. And, of course, you add to all of this, all the pressure that flows from the growth that we would experience anyways, add to that the complexity created by climate change, and you think that, that things get really kind of dicey for us. Now, paradoxically, I think, if our focus is only on the problems, I don't think we're going to get much traction. And I think that's been part of the problem in the water community. A lot of frustrated people in the water community believe, I suspect, that if we just reveal the problems more and in more detail, people will naturally start pursuing solutions. And I haven't seen a lot of evidence that that's the case. So I think it's helpful to also look at opportunities. And we have lots of opportunities, I think, that relate to water. So we heard some examples, for instance, of the markets for clean tech and smart water technologies that the Ontario government has identified. This is a theme the Conference Board of Canada has alluded to. We can start asking some questions if we're going to be a little bit more strategic about the potential for market opportunities that emerge from whatever water competitive advantage we might have in certain regions of Canada. Questions of our ability to help meet global demand for water expertise in terms of education and training. Can we harness the capacity that we have in our universities and colleges to meet some of that demand? I mean, I think that's an opportunity that if we were a little bit more organized, we could take advantage of. So how do we start addressing all of the problems we've identified, and how do we take advantage of those opportunities? Put another way, and I like the way Bob put it this morning, how do we get moving while we still have some room to move? So how do we get moving before the crisis hits? Now, lots of people have called for a national water policy or strategy of some kind at this conference. It's been a little bit of a theme, actually. I think this reflects fairly widespread support from organizations that have been busy on this file for a few years. The Canadian Water Resources Association, the Forum for Leadership on Water, Pollution Probe, just to name three of many organizations that have been pushing some kind of an agenda for a coordinated national action. I think a Canadian national water strategy could be an effective way to address a lot of the governance challenges that relate to the situation we have now, which we've all established is really quite fragmented and lots of ad hocery going on. But I'm not in favor of just any Canadian water, a national water strategy. I'm not in favor of a Lord of the Rings, one ring to rule them all kind of strategy, all-encompassing, top-down and cumbersome. And I don't think that's the answer. I don't think that'll allow us to be as nimble and flexible as we're going to need. I think what we need is a Canadian national water strategy that facilitates coordinated national action where that's appropriate. It needs to be grounded in common principles. It needs to be developed collaboratively. Remember that diverse mix of actors that's out there. It needs to be lean. It needs to be action-oriented. It needs to be focused on areas where we're better off acting together than we are acting independently. And so there are endless areas like that that we talked about in the last couple of days, questions of adaptation to climate change, the link between water and food, agricultural productivity and food security, the link to energy security, questions of transboundary resources, not only between Canada and the United States, but also within Canada, questions of basic data collection and sharing and monitoring, drinking water safety, especially on First Nations reserves, market opportunities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure we could all make a great list. So how do we get there, right? Are you about to show me a sign? No? Good. Excellent. All right. You had that about to show me a sign thing going on there. All right. So how do we get there, right? So I think one of the things that we, just to recap a few critical points, I think, that inform a little bit how we get there is, as a few people have noted already, I think we're in a moment in our history right now where I won't say that the stars have aligned, but I think they're aligning. They're lining themselves up. David Schindler was saying that he's been doing this for 45 years. He's got 25 years on me, but for 20 years, I've been a water nerd and interested in water, and I got interested in water because of the last big surge of national tension, which was the Inquiry on Federal Water Policy, and I had a chance to watch it all dribble away, interest evaporated. So many good puns, right? This is pretty big, right? And so, I mean, I'm a little suspicious. I've seen this play before. You know, I've seen the interest come. I've seen it go. But this is looking good because there's a whole bunch of new actors and new interests involved, too. The catch, of course, is that all of these various actors, including our governments, are motivated by all kinds of different interests and values, and that's one of the key pieces that we're going to have to address. These have to be clarified and balanced and addressed, at least, if not reconciled. And I think, third, the key theme, coming back to the theme of this panel, is that this is a governance challenge. No government on its own, not even all governments on their own, can create and deliver a national water strategy. In the current environment, I think the capacity does not exist. The number of actors who have the ability to influence outcomes is far larger than simply governments. And so this becomes a question of governance, of negotiation, of collaboration. Okay, so let's take advantage of the opportunity we have now to move while there's still room to move. As I said, there are a number of initiatives that are underway. The CWRA, for example, is launching a dialogue very soon. FLO is continuing with the excellent work that it's doing. The Canadian Council of Ministers of the Environment has been releasing some materials and taking some steps, and I think we're going to hear about some of those, so that's excellent. But I think, too, you know, we were talking this morning about the importance of leadership, and I completely agree that leadership is critical, but the problem, of course, of saying, okay, it's all about leadership is that it always ends up that someone has to do something. And so we're sitting around waiting for someone to do something. And I think that someone is us. We have to find a way to integrate concern for water, to integrate concern for water security into the day-to-day decision-making, the day-to-day business that goes on among all of these various actors, whether it's our governments, industry, citizens, municipalities, whatever. We have to find a way to integrate water as a basic decision-making consideration. I'll give you one tiny example. In Ontario, we have on the books, I was just checking on my mobile just before the talk started to see if it had received royal proclamation yet. And according to the e-law site, it hasn't. But we have this thing called the Sustainable Water and Sewage Systems Act in Ontario that, as far as I know, has not yet received royal proclamation. Steve's nodding. Excellent. Right? So this is full cost pricing, what Steve was talking about. But the important thing, too, is part of that statute would integrate, would stretch the full cost pricing blanket over the costs of source water protection, for example, which could be very, very interesting if we start to view the cost of providing the water service as basic watershed management, the costs of that, incorporating that into the bill. And so what you're doing with a statute like that is you're kind of skirting around the whole question to change people's values and norms and ethics and whatnot, and you're putting in place some fundamental economic tools. It's just one tiny interest about an example, I should say, of making water part of the business. So I think this is an entirely tractable problem, this business of integrating concern for water into our day-to-day decision-making. As Karen was suggesting this morning, there really are lots of examples out there. We really are not leading the pack here on the file of taking a coordinated national approach. I like to stay in touch with what's going on in New Zealand, just to name one country, for example, which has had an interesting freshwater program of action, which has involved a coordinated national dialogue, integration between the national government, the Maori, the councils, and industry. They're sorting out common principles. They're finding ways in which they can address those water and economy connections. I mean, you know, everybody else is doing it, right? We can too, right? And so the solutions are out there. It is, as Minister Prentice was suggesting a few moments ago, it is a function of just will and finding the right tools and putting them in place. Thank you very much.